Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy C. I'm from New York and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, May 6, 2026. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we are on page 36 in More About Alcoholism, starting at the top of the page, Yet He Got Drunk Again. Reading to the bottom of that paragraph and decided to have another glass of milk. Today's readers are for the 12 steps, Arlene E., 12 traditions, Nancy R. Reader of the text is Charles H., page 164, Sally A. Our backup is Christina L. Our newcomer greeter is Reva P. Our second hour host is Colleen M. And announcements is Kathy C. The reference number for yesterday, Tuesday, May 5th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,432. That's 23,432. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,433. That's 23,433. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth edition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message
Kathy, you got muted.
Lost our moderator.
Does someone want to go ahead and do the 12 steps?
The audio is not coming in. Maybe from my end, I'll call him again.
Someone want to do the steps or?
This is Arlene E. here to read the 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless. Pardon me? One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11 sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out.
Thank you so much, Arlene. Sorry about that. I got off the line. I'm now going to ask Nancy R. to please read the 12 traditions. Come on in, Nancy.
I am now unmuted. Thank you so much, Kathy C., for your service. Nancy R., I'm recovered compulsive overeater in New York. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service. Good morning. I pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study in the Big Book. We're on page 36, the top of the page, reading that one paragraph. And I'm now going to ask Charles H. to begin reading. Come on in, Charles.
Thank you very much, Kathy, for your service. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they had a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. Also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the month. During the months, I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still no thought of drinking, I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. This is a lot in this paragraph here. I want to drill down on a lot of the places in this paragraph. That first word, notion, is a mental obsession. And a lot of people have theories about him coming to work on a Tuesday morning. Maybe he was drunk. Jim is an alcoholic compulsive overeater. Because here's some rationalization. Then I decided, so he rationalized that he felt irritated that he had to be a sales. You ain't have to be no salesperson for this company that you lost through drinking. You was lucky. Because back in them days, it was hard up. You know, the economy, probably like in 2026, back in 1930, whatever, they was hard up. So can you imagine that conversation? Hey, you know I lost this business to you, but can you give me an opportunity to work for you? Wow. I don't know if I could do it, Jim. Shout out to you. But so then he rationalized that resentment. He probably didn't do it. So then he had a notion that if he went in, he rationalized going into the, driving into the country. I wonder if gas was cheap back then, to see a prospect for a car. Now, you know damn well you wasn't seeing no prospect for no car. You made a unconscious decision to binge and drink, right? So, yeah, I had eaten it because he's talking about I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. He sat down at a table. And tomorrow we're gonna hear that word suddenly. That's how this disease is. It's cunning, baffling, and insidious. It doesn't matter how much time you have, how much abstinence, how much times you hold your breath underwater, how much times you say that you're a recovered, compulsive, alcoholic, or overeater. It could take you down if you take this thing for granted. You know, all five of these characters, the person under 30, the man of 30, the jaywalker, Jim, Fred, we think we got time, and we really don't. This is a matter of life and death. It's serious. I know people are like, you're doing too much, you're taking this too serious. Every single day, people are dying as a result of not taking this spiritual recovery serious. Whether you want to call it religion, whether you want, who gives a shit? I don't care. This thing works, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Charles, thank you so much for getting us started. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you'd like to share, press *1 and give me your name, and I'm ready to take some names. Who would like to share?
Rachel K. Colorado.
Teresa. I have a Rachel K. And Teresa.
Rachel K.
Colorado.
Who's in Colorado?
Jen A.
Oh, Jen, I'm so sorry. Thank you.
Vasa.
I have Rachel. Rachel, Teresa, Jen, Vasa.
Lisa.
Betty Jane M.
There was a gentleman. I don't
Richard
know if his name was
T.
Richard. Richard? Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
Betty Jean in Connecticut.
Thank you, Betty Jean. Thank you, Sally. I'm going to tell you who I have, and if I didn't get your name, you could let me know. We have Rachel K., Teresa, Jen A., Vasa, Lisa, Betty Jean, Richard, and Sally A. Was there anyone that gave their name and I didn't hear them?
Lisa Jo B.
Thank you. Okay, we're just going to take that for our first lineup. So Rachel K. followed by Teresa, then Jen A. Rachel, come on in and share with us and tell us where you're calling in from, please.
Thank you so much. Hi, my name is Rachel K. I am a compulsive overeater from Indiana. And the thing about this paragraph that strikes me is if we weren't reading this paragraph in a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, if we were just reading this in a novel, this would be like oh, this is just a normal morning. This is like no big deal. And there's like these subtle words. Okay. I felt irritated. I had a few words, nothing serious. And it reminds me, it's like I can't afford to overlook these things that other people are like, yeah, I felt a little anxious about that, or I was a little worried about that, or I was irritated about that. Like, because normal people, those things won't kill them. Those things, unless I inventory them on a daily basis, will kill me. They're deadly because they will fester and they'll grow, you know, just like ugly things, disgusting, yucky things grow in the dark, and nice flowers and everything grow in the sunshine. So I have to expose them to sunshine. So like I'll have, or even myself, or, you know, I'll have sponsees who say, well, I didn't have a 10 step because I didn't have any fear or resentment, you know? And I'm like, really? Well, aren't, you know, I know you have such and such coming up. Are you worried? Well, yeah, I'm a little worried. Well, you told me that your mom such and such, you know, did that irritate you? Well, yeah, I'm irritated. Irritation is just a long word for resentment. It's, well, I guess one more syllable, but not that long a word. But anyway, irritation, that's resentment. Worry, that's fear. Anxiety, that's fear. I mean, we call it by different names, but it all comes down to, you know, fear and resentment. And so we have a lot of little different, you know, words like these and little clues in here that, yeah, this guy is resentful. You know, he's resentful. He had a few words with his boss. I don't think those were nice words. You know, he says they're nothing serious, but I have to take those things seriously. You know, whenever I am disturbed, disturbed doesn't sound like that big a deal. But, you know, the problem is with me. I have to, any kind of disturbance, any sort of, what do they call it, disturbance in the force, I have to pay attention to. I can't afford to just go, you know, I don't think I'll write about it. I don't think I'll inventory it because it's not that big a deal. You know, say I have a little resentment against somebody at a meeting. Well, I only see them once a week, so I don't really need to inventory that. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Because those things will fester. Even if there's a person that's not that, you know, essential to my life, I have to look at those things. I have to examine them. It's like the little pebble in the shoe. If I don't take it out, you know, after a mile or two walking, I've got this enormous yucky blister. So anyway, I don't know if that makes sense at all. But thanks for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much. It's Rachel K. from Indiana. And before Teresa comes in, I just want to let anyone who's came in after we started, we are on page 36, the top of the page, reading that first whole paragraph to another glass of milk. We have Teresa, Jen A., and then Vasa. Teresa, come on in and give us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in, please.
Certainly. This is Teresa A., in Silver Spring, Maryland. So happy to be on the line this morning. Who doesn't love Jim's story? And this particular paragraph, I call this the what had happened paragraph, right? So he got drunk again. They asked him what happened. And Jim goes, see, what had happened was, and anytime someone says what had happened was, get ready for some for a long, convoluted story, right? So he starts telling us all these things. I don't think it's a mistake that this paragraph is relatively long. It takes up half of the page before he even gets to the heart of the matter, before he even gets to the meat of it. Why? Because this is, as you know, Charles, you know, hit the nail on the head when he said rationalization. Rationalization is when we are going through our minds trying to make sense of something that does not make sense. And this is one of the most insidious forms of dishonesty. I have heard it, you know, I've heard it said that denial stands for don't even know that I am lying, right? Don't even know I'm lying. And the reason that I recognize this is because I have done this so many times when a sponsor has said, well, Teresa, what happened? How did you get here again? Okay, I start with a long, convoluted story, and it probably, like Jim, includes like a lot of, I had no intention of eating. I wasn't even thinking about it. And then what I did, I wasn't even thinking about it and all these things. And in this whole paragraph, he doesn't even get to the heart of the matter, right? And so because I've had years and years and years and years and years of experience of these type of justifications, I now, as a sponsor or when I take 10 steps, I recognize it when people are giving me their justifications. So my job is to be compassionate and to be patient, but also to help them cut to the meat of it. Okay, let's get to the meat of it, because in their mind, they don't know that they're lying yet. They're still in rationalization and justification. And it's not like I don't still do it. There's still times when I do it, but that's the beauty of the fellowship. People sit down, we tell our stories, and then we realize, okay, the heart of the matter is this, right? And we get out of that dishonesty. Thanks, and I pass.
Teresa, thank you so much. That's Teresa A. from Maryland. Next up, we have Jen A., followed by Vasa, and then Lisa. Jen, come on in.
Thanks so much, and thanks for hearing me this morning. This is Jen A. I'm usually in Colorado, recovered. Thank you, God, for your grace and mercy on this girl's life. But I'm just down the street from my Silver Springs, Maryland girl on the line. So, you know, wow, what a gift and a privilege and an honor it is to read this paragraph with you all on the line this morning. You know, more about alcoholism, it should be like awareness you know, this whole chapter should be about awareness. Why? Because for me in this paragraph, I can speak to it personally and just say, I remember being there where I didn't even remember the first thought or whatever that came into my head, but I just thought, oh, I can do it this time. I'll just have a few nachos with cheese with my coworkers while I'm out here in Baltimore. You know what? Like, no big deal. And in a couple of days, I'll be fine. You know, it won't start the binge cycle over again. And I convinced myself of that. Why? Because my mind is broken and I need something to come in to give me an intuitive thought or decision so that I can relax and take it easy and not struggle. You know, so I put the food down and I worked this program. And today I can come into Baltimore, Maryland after 8 years of recovery and I can sit down and I know what my abstinent foods and meals are and I don't pick up. But that's not only it. The awareness that comes in is that spirit, that intuition from God that we get as recovered fellows so that we don't take that first drink or that first bite. And today I'm so grateful for it because why? Because I know, like it was said on the line this morning, I don't have to be angry. I don't have to be pissed off. My sponsees have to write a list of like 45 to 60 different words that mean resentment. How about this one? I was upset with my boss. I rolled my eyes at her. You know what I mean? That's just enough for me to do a 10-step. Why? Because if I don't, it is going to fester and fester and fester until one day I'm just going to think, oh, I can just have a few nachos with that cheese. It won't kill me. You know, and that's what's so great about this program. But I don't get that awareness just by coming to meetings. I don't get that awareness just by learning a few lines or slogans in the program. I get that awareness when I hollow myself out through a thorough inventory process, 1 through 12, you know, and keep turning my will and my life over to God on a daily basis and working this program like my hair's on fire. I'm just saying, like, the calls that I get from people who have relapsed or looking for a sponsor coming back from relapse, you know why they don't want to be sponsored? They don't want to give stuff up. They don't want to do the work. And I don't know if you guys know this, but it doesn't work if I don't surrender, if I don't completely give myself up. So I'm so grateful that we have this paragraph and this chapter. And I think my time's up. I'm out walking, so I'll pass with that. Thanks.
Thank you so much. That's Jen A. from Colorado, who's in Maryland today. Next up, we have Vasa, followed by Lisa, and then Betty Jean. Vasa, come on in and share with us.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, moderator, for leading the meeting. And I am Vasa, grateful. Recovered compulsive overeater. I'm calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. And this is my story before I came to Overeaters Anonymous. This is what I did. The things that Bill did, it's amazing. I remember when I would go on my diets, I had no clue about the disease. I had no clue about food addiction. I had no clue about high power. I had no clue about none of that stuff till I came to my first meeting, and I started learning about the disease, what my problem was and what the obsession, what my problem was and what the solution was. I mean, I was so excited to finally find out after so many years, many, many, many years struggling with the food addiction. I said, really? If I do this, then I will recover? And people that had gone through the process had been abstinent for a long time, and it was the promises. And I want those promises so bad. And my mom saying, is that really going to happen to me? Yes, it will, if I was ready and willing to surrender to the program and to higher power greater than myself. And, you know, I heard about Bill, how he was depressed also when he gave up alcohol. And in those days, I don't think they knew much about what the sugars did also. And I know people have come from AA into our program, and they have more difficult time putting the food down than they did with alcohol. And I hear, and I did all these crazy things with the food addiction. Oh, I'll cut it in half. I'm going to make brownies. I'm going to make a cake. Whatever's going on. I'll just cut the, well, what's this? It's so stupid. Cut the whole sugar. I need the whole pie. Maybe I didn't eat it all at the same time, but it would have taken me the whole day, go back and forth, and eating other foods. I was in denial, and I was rationalizing without even knowing or thinking about it. And here I come to the program. I'm learning the truth about myself and about others also. And this program, it's a gift from God. My sponsor said to me, I'm giving it to you as a gift. I'm not going to do it for you, Vasa. You got to do it. You got to go after it. You got to. And I said, I will, whatever it takes, live or die, I choose to live. I'm so grateful. I've been here many, many, many years, and I continue. Yes, I want to be spiritually fit. It's the paragraph before that. We went all well for time. But he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And that I want to be spiritually fit to keep going. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much. That's Vasa O from Massachusetts. Next up, we have Lisa, followed by Betty Jean and Richard. And if you came in after we started, we are on page 36. Yet he got drunk again reading that whole paragraph. So he decided to have another a glass of milk. Lisa, can you give us the first initial of your last name and where you're calling in from? And please come in and share with us.
Hi, this is Lisa C. from New Jersey. Thank you so much for your service, and everyone who shared. These shares have been so just really, really invigorating and so insightful to me, like seeing so many new angles. And I know that the first time that I came into OA, the sponsor that I worked with pointed out to me that all the I's in this paragraph, and she had me circle them and really think about how, you know, Jim was just completely driven by his own self-will, you know, just to really point out what that kind of life looks like compared, of course, to the spiritual one that we're trying to have in recovery. Right? Like if we were to rewrite this paragraph on the other side, like in recovery, right? It would be like, I came to work, I felt irritated, I stopped everything, went to my car, prayed, called my sponsor, did a two-way prayer, you know, like it would be a totally different story. But anyway, my looking at it today with hopefully somewhat fresh eyes, and also listening to everyone's shares. I mean, it just makes me think about the spontaneity and how dangerous that is. Like, then I decided to drive into the country. It's like, I felt irritated. Jim can't handle feeling irritated. He can't handle, like, maybe his boss being unhappy with him and work not going well. And I couldn't either. You know, I mean, I would have to run to like the corner store and get myself something, you know, to kind of anesthetize myself when work felt irritating to me, if I became disturbed. I mean, but also like then I decided to drive into the country. Like, That kind of spontaneity, really dangerous for me. But in the disease, it's like I have to live spontaneously because it keeps the flames of my anxiety constantly flowing, right? And that's part of the heart of the disease for me, right? Is always living in fear and always thinking that I can fix it, which keeps me completely paralyzed in a spiritual sense and in an emotional one, and makes me unable to fulfill, I think, what is the promise of my life, what my gifts are, right? Keeps me from being useful to others and keeps me from shining, I think, what is God's love around me, so that I can improve my life and others, right? But that keeps me paralyzed, and that spontaneity, right? Never knowing what I'm going to eat, right? Just what do I feel like today? And not thinking far ahead, like, okay, well, today this is happening and that's happening, so I'm going to have to eat it this time. I'm going to have to pack this. Or I'm going to be in a place where, you know, what are my choices and what will I, am I looking up the menus? Am I knowing exactly what I'm going to have? And thank you, Jim, for sharing your story exactly as it happened. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much. That's Lisa C. from New Jersey. Next up, we have Betty Jean, followed by Richard, Sally, and Lisa Joe, and then I can take some more names. And if you came in late, we are on page 36, the top of the page. Yet he got drunk again, the whole paragraph, another glass of milk. Betty Jean, please come in and share with us.
Sure. This is Betty Jean, compulsive overeater in Connecticut. Good to be here with you all today. You know, I don't drink at all. I don't have a taste for alcohol, but I can so identify with this reading. That was me. And it was Tuesday because on Monday I was completely hungover on food from everything that I had binged on all weekend. I once walked into work on a Monday and my coworkers were horrified because my eyes were almost swollen shut. I had consumed so much sodium over the weekend in all the fast food that my hands were swollen, my feet were swollen, my eyes were swollen. I looked awful. And I made up an excuse for them saying it was from allergies. It was an allergy, all right, with all the food I had eaten. Every Monday morning, I started a diet. By Tuesday, I was jonesing for the sugar again. By Tuesday, I was angry, I was miserable, and I'm sorry if you had to work with me. I did the same thing of rationalizing everything and also being oversensitive and disturbed by everything. I couldn't handle emotions and situations that other people could handle very easily. I love Zoom. I stay on Zoom because I don't have to go out of my house. And when I go out of my house is when there are drive-thrus. And I'm always guarding against that because I had a drive-thru addiction. Sometimes when I'm on the road, I see people with a bumper sticker that says, God is my co-pilot. And I want to say to them, he better be your pilot. You better not be the one in charge. And I know that for me, when I'm in charge, I'm going to take us someplace bad. So I've got to let go. I've got to let God. I've got to hand it over to God. And I'm not the pilot. I am not the co-pilot. I'm tied up in the trunk. That's where I belong because of this disease that causes me to rationalize everything. Yesterday, I was in the grocery store. I found myself staring at the bakery case and at the things there. And I stopped and I said to myself, that's a glass of milk. That's a glass of milk. I can't have it because I know where it leads to. It never stops. I've been food sober for 2 years, and I love that, but I still will rationalize. I still hear the voice of the disease saying, go ahead. You can just have one. Go ahead. You've been good. And that's why I have to stay in these rooms and stay in these meetings. I have to hear your voices. I have to hear your recovery. And know that I'm part of this herd and stay in the middle of it every single day, all day. And I will pass. Thank you all.
Thank you so much, Betty Jean, and from Connecticut. Next up, we have Richard, followed by Sally, and then Lisa Joe. Richard, please come in and tell us where you're calling in from, please.
Hi, this is Richard T. in Hagerstown, Maryland. I'm 69 years old. I've been in OA 21 years. I want to talk about my plan of eating. I eat three healthy, moderate meals a day. I also want to talk about what I drink. I haven't found anything in the OA literature that mentions anything about what you drink. When you think of beverages, there are so many choices. My beverage of choice is water. It has no calories. I drink a 20-ounce bottle of water as soon as I wake up in the morning. I find it curbs my appetite and just totally eliminates my food cravings. I've been abstinent for 75 days today, and it's made it easy to resist the temptation to overeat or to eat foods that give you a temporary good feeling but are actually bad for your health. And I do this because you can't just eat food. You have to drink fluids or beverages too. So if this sounds interesting to you, you can reach me at area code 240.
We don't put our numbers out, Richard.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for sharing. That's Richard G. from Maryland. Thank you.
Right.
Next. Bye. Thank you, Richard. Next up,
we have
Sally A. Next up, we have Sally A.
Good morning,
A.
Kathy.
Good morning. Thank you.
Okay. I'm just trying to transfer over here. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Kathy. Thank you again for your service to all of us. So, of course, we've heard some great things. And, Charles, thanks for your opening. That was totally thought-provoking. Why did this guy stay in the company that his family once owned and that was causing him such angst to work for? Never did I think of that thought. This guy who literally was the cause of his own resentment because he wasn't moving forward to do something different. Thank you, Charles. So I'm Sally A. from New York. I apologize. I'm very excited about this paragraph and all the shares that came before. I'm really surprised that I haven't heard anybody talk about all the I's in this paragraph. I felt, I had, I decided, I once owned. This is a big paragraph for the I's. This guy is completely consumed with what his thinking is. And to me, the interesting thing in a few lines down, it says, then I decided. There was a big mistake. He decided. What happened to the pause and pray? He says later on that I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. Okay, definitely flirting with the enemy. If you've been eating in a bar and you've been sober a short time, months, I would think that you'd want to stay away. I personally don't walk in. I didn't walk in for at least a couple of months to places that were just, you know, Carvel. That was not a place I haunted when I was, you know, walking away from the food in the beginning. At this time, I'm neutral. And not only that, at this time, I just turned to my higher power. And this doesn't seem to be something that this guy ever did. I had the notion I might find a customer for a car at this place. Yes, and as someone else shared, this guy's got some very interesting excuses for what he's doing in a bar that happens to serve sandwiches. For myself, I want to remind you again, this is the essentials, page 13. This is how I got recovered this past year. It's very different from any other recovery I've had, and I've had two other five-year recoveries and countless other months of recovery throughout my 43 years. This is different because, number one, I really have to look at what do I believe. And the most important thing I have to say to myself, because someone said to me recently, I'm having a hard time being abstinent. Hello, that's a good place to start. That's step one. You're having a hard time being or getting abstinent. That's because we're powerless over this thing. And we need to totally surrender, as someone else so beautifully says it, and turn to our higher power and ask him to do it for you. Thanks for letting me share with that iPad.
Thank you, Sally A. from New York. Next up, we have Lisa Jo B., and then I can take some more names. Come on in, Lisa.
Thank you so much. This is Lisa Jo B. in Colorado. This paragraph just says so much to me. First of all, it talks about a dangerous place for him to be, and having a dangerous emotion, the irritability. And I've come to learn that those 10 steps are like miracles to address any glitch that comes up in my mind, any disturbance, that it needs to be ironed out. It needs to be shared with someone. I need to get really quiet and focused on what God wants me to be and do. I just think that there's such an insidious nature to this disease. And I looked up insidious because I really like that word, proceeding in a gradual, subtle way, but with harmful effects. And the way he rationalized being in a space that has his drug of choice, the alcohol, is baffling. He expressed there was a bar there. And I'm sure that deep down inside of him, he was excited. His heart was probably beating faster. He was his alcoholic nature was elated with the possibility of being lit up. It's such a sneaky disease. It wants to kill, steal, and destroy us. And that people, places, things. I can't be at this stage. Even though, well, it doesn't even matter. I can't put myself in dangerous positions, especially if I'm disturbed. Not even especially. I can't put myself in dangerous positions because it's just too dangerous for me. I need safety is number one, and my connection with God. And if I don't have safety and peace of mind, I'm going to slip, and it might be gradual, and it's insidious. So I'm just really grateful for the program and for the opportunity to cross paths with it and to stay in connection with God and be in fellowship with you all. Thanks.
Thank you so much. That's Lisa Jo B. from Colorado. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you shared on Monday or Tuesday, we ask you to hold back. We are on page 36, and I could take four more names.
Joe M.
CK.
Alexis F.
I only heard CK.
Joe M. Minnesota.
M. Joe M from Minnesota. I have CK, Jan M, Joe M, and Alexis. I have the four. Thank you so much. CK, come on in and share with us, please.
Peace, family. This is CK in California. Today I have 570 days, and I'm very grateful. And I'm a real Bill. You know, Bill drank oceans and oceans of alcohol. And I used to eat mountains and mountains of food. And very grateful to be here this morning. You know, Jim's day started out with a resentment. And there's some background noise. If people can please mute, I'd appreciate it. Jim's day started out with a resentment. And we know that resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more addicts than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease. But we have not been only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And so because Jim wasn't spiritually fit and didn't have a program behind him, he reached out for relief in his addiction. He went for relief with what was familiar. And corrupted something so innocent, the glass of milk, with the addiction. And I just remember, like, how many things, innocent things, did I corrupt with my addiction, you know, seemingly innocent, and just made it into something that I could get high off of. And so now if my day starts off with resentment because I have a program behind me, you know, I seek relief in recovery today. You know, I seek relief in a 10-step and meditation and with working with others. And, you know, I use program to try to battle back these disturbances and these irritations, because even though, you know, there's still quite a lot of disturbances and irritations in my life, and there will always be. But today the solution is in seeking comfort from my higher power, rather than trying to always seek comfort in the refrigerator, you know? And so so I'm just grateful that I have a program behind me, and I have solutions today. You know, I don't just rely on self, because self-reliance doesn't work. You know, self-reliance is a dangerous delusion that I can, you know, do this by myself. So, yeah, so I'm just grateful for program and options and solutions and outreach calls and alternatives to addiction. So I'm going to just wrap up by saying, you know, there's a very popular speaker on the line who is married and is using his popularity to manipulate and 13-step newcomers returning members. And so if you've been put in this position, please speak up, because it's the silence that's allowing this predatory behavior to continue. So thanks for letting me share, y'all.
Thank you, CK. That's CK from California. Next up, we have Jan M, followed by Joe M. Jan, you want to come in and tell us where you're calling in from, please? Is there Jan M? Then I will go with Joe M. Joe, can you come in and share with us?
Yes, thank you for your service. My name is Joe, and I'm a compulsive overeater in Minnesota. I first want to make sure that I'm on the correct paragraph. It's the top paragraph of page 36. Is that correct?
Yes, that's where we are, Joe.
Okay, thank you so much. So, you know, Jim's decision to stop at a roadside place where they had a bar actually makes complete sense. It's not a crazy decision on his part. It is the decision that he will make because he has failed to enlarge his spiritual life. In the paragraph before, the bottom of page 35. So because he's not in fit spiritual condition, the foregone conclusion is that he's going to start marching back toward the alcohol. So this decision that he's making here isn't crazy. It's not a mystery. It is not a mystery why we ever go back to the food once we're in abstinence, because that's the nature of powerlessness. They could have titled this chapter more about powerlessness. This is how it functions. This is how addiction functions. It's embedded and ensconced inside of powerlessness. So when he says, "I had no intention of drinking," that has nothing to do with it. Intention has nothing to do with powerlessness. Still no thought of drink, that has nothing to do with it. What has to do with it is the fact that he was not in fit spiritual condition. And Jim is me. When I am not in fit spiritual condition, I'm marching back toward the food. And it's not because I want to, and it's not because I intend to, because I might not have a thought of eating. That's completely beside the point. What's the center of the point is that what is the state of my spiritual condition today in this moment? And with that, I will pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Joe M. from Minnesota. Next up, we have Alexis S. from New Jersey. Come on in, Alexis.
It's Alexis S. from New Jersey. I like to give people hope, you know, talk about the goodness in them. I look at what their inventories have been as far as sponsorship goes. Before the preceding mindset that they have some friction at home or in the office or in the classroom or wherever. And if there's been a lot of resentment, a lot of hard feelings, a lot of being burnt up, I showed them that there's progress from the time before, you know, that minor irritations don't have to be built up into big, hard resentments. It depends upon the individual, I think. I know for myself, when I was in a mental hospital, I could get decent food. It was like fish heads with sauce and rice or something. And I came out and I had every reason to eat, right? I'd been tortured with inedible food. So I went straight to a diner. Did I have a reason to the place where I had been? For not serving good food? Yes, I did. But it depends on whether you have an alcoholic mind. At the time, I did. I had an alcoholic mind. And I wanted to go straight for the hard stuff. You know, the pastries and the candy and the cake and all that. And my daughter bought in clothes, size 7 to 24, while I was in the hospital. And I didn't get the picture that, you know, it related to my compulsive overeating because I was starting to gain weight after losing it for the unseen time. So I believe that you show people God's mercy and love, and they respond to it, not just, you know, like looking down the well and saying,
"That's time,
you
Alexis.
Know, it's a hard resentment." Thank you.
Alexis, thank you so much. That was Alexis S. from New Jersey. We have 2 minutes. Is there Jan M? Did I mishear that? Or is there someone else that would like to share?
It was Suzanne M. Thank you.
Oh, man. Yes. Suzanne, can you share for 2 minutes?
I can. Thank you for being in service this morning. I'm from Warminster, Pennsylvania. And, boy, this paragraph and all the shares and the opening speaker, just telling my truth, you know, talking about self-sabotage. I recently celebrated a year abstinent, and I, you know, when I'm coming up on an anniversary, I self-sabotage, and I've been, you know, having little things here and there, but not sugar, and they've just been creeping in, and, you know, I realized, like, there's things on my red list, so, like, that is a relapse, you know, and of course, you know, my disease wants to lie and, you know, say I'm slipping and sliding, but I'm past that. So, and, you know, like you said, it's the glass of milk, like one. And so one night I think it's okay. And then two nights and then three nights. And, you know, this disease is cunning and baffling. And I'll tell you the other thing, my spiritual connection has not been as good as usual because I don't have the willingness to get out of bed in the morning like I should to take that time with my higher power. And of course, you know, when I was doing things well for a year, that was not a problem until I just, you know, stopped getting out of bed. That's just my truth. So I guess today is day one, and you know, and I have to tighten up my food plan
and, you know, be serious about my red light foods. And with that, I will pass and thank you all for being in service. That's all I have.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks for calling, coming back in. I got your name wrong. I'm sorry for that. Thank you, everyone, that shared. And please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. The share ID for today, Wednesday, May 6, 2026, is 23,437. That is 23437. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Well, Sally A., please read a vision for you. A book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Come on in, Sally.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. If your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.